Thanks for downloading this podcast from RNIB Connect Radio.
Hey, you're listening to the Happy Hour podcast, a trimmed down version of our hour-long show. If you're enjoying the songs and would like to hear them in full, along with all the interviews, tips and chat, just catch the full show plus some extra tracks that you might have missed on RNIB Connect Radio. We're on every Monday at 1 p.m. with a repeat Thursday at 6 p.m. and Sunday at 10 a.m. with new episodes every other week. But for now, enjoy the Happy Hour podcast. Welcome to today's Happy Hour. It's your mix of music and chat about sight loss, mental health and well-being.
Paulina and Holly here with you for the next hour, and we kick off today's show with a cracker of a song. Here's Stereophonics and Dakota.
You are listening to the Happy Hour on RNIB Connect Radio. Holly Chute here, and as always, I'm joined with Paulina.
We're joined at the hip. It is so nice to have you here with us on the show today. And of course, we have some great music for you, including the Queen of Soul herself and a few newer tracks. So there might be a quarantine album release track somewhere in there. And we'll also have some really great features as well.
Yep, visually impaired chef Kim J will share a perfect autumn recipe to warm you up. And I'll be speaking with Ross Wilcock all about being part of the LGBT community and living with sight loss as a blind gay man and learning to accept himself.
And next up, I'm finding out about an app that uses gaming and counseling to help young people deal with grief. So that's coming up shortly after, well, as promised, the Queen of Soul herself. Here's Respect and Aretha Franklin. Part of Me was launched in 2018 as an innovative app-based adventure game that helped bereaved children use their mobile phones or tablets to help and cope with the grief and confusion caused by the loss of a loved one. A design-led company then, a charity now, A Part of Me is leading the way in helping open a dialogue about mental health and the need for a better focus on it in a world that for years refused to acknowledge its importance. I'm joined now by child psychotherapist and co-founder of the charity, Louis Weinstock. Now, Louis, let me begin with a massive congratulations. Was it always the goal to become a charity?
Thank you. No, at the start of this adventure, we weren't really sure what the best format for the organization would be. And we looked into different things. We tried a few different approaches, but in the end, the more that we got into designing the core app, we realized that we wanted it to be free so that as many young people who needed it could access it. And through that and various other decisions that we made along the way, we realized that a charity was the best structure to deliver the app.
Yeah, because it's quite a unique, I guess, concept, because you're combining animation, gaming and counseling.
Well, there is a lot more happening in this area these days, so perhaps not that well known of, but people are doing lots of experiments with bringing in sort of psychological therapies and techniques into the digital world. But what I think is unique about what we've done is we've combined game world, mobile gaming, and grief support. And as far as I'm aware, we hadn't seen any combination of those two things before. And the reason that we chose that medium of a mobile game was because in the early stages, we ran a series of co-design workshops with bereaved children, young people and families. And we showed them examples that were out there of apps that had been designed to help people in grief. And the feedback that we got from pretty much all of the young people was that they were very, very unlikely to use the apps that we showed them. They all sort of thought they were a bit dry and a bit boring compared to the sort of types of games and other apps that they're more used to using and playing. So that was kind of the decision, really, to do an experiment to see what it would be like to offer a grief psychology service via a mobile game.
Did you find the kids were more receptive to this format compared to, I guess, a normal grief counselling session?
Yes, well, so far we are pretty pleased with the results and the impact, even though the current version of the app is very much the sort of very first version, and we have lots of plans of how we're going to continually improve it. But we've had an independent evaluation which followed a group of 10 young people who were randomly found, who'd all experienced bereavement, and it followed them on a journey from just before they started using a part of me and followed them through until the end of their experience. And the feedback from that independent evaluation was really encouraging and positive, showed that the app really helped young people to understand their emotions and was just a very helpful support through their grieving process. So from that point and from lots of other sort of points of data and anecdotal evidence, conversations with young people and parents and teachers, we don't really have any regrets for having chosen that medium.
Why do you think it is so important that we actually discuss mental well-being with our children, especially at a time when they're so vulnerable?
I wouldn't necessarily say that our service is about discussing well-being. It's more about providing a safe and playful environment which helps them to feel safe so that they can explore certain difficult elements of their life and their experience. Because ultimately, when grief goes wrong, and a term that we use for this, which is a clinical term, is complicated grief, to describe what can happen effectively when grief goes wrong. That's usually because the young person is in a situation where externally or internally they don't feel safe. And so they can't actually process the thoughts and feelings around their loss. So for us, the most important thing, rather than sort of discussing it directly, is to create a safe environment in which they, to the extent that they are ready and willing, they can explore their own grief.
So obviously you've had your charity status confirmed, which is amazing news. The app is continuing to support many young people and their families, but what is next for A Part of Me?
So right now our biggest focus is on fundraising. So we have managed to do amazing things on a very little budget up until now, which, you know, in many ways, I feel really proud of the team. We've currently got around 130 volunteers from different parts of the world who all dedicate time to helping the service to grow in different ways, whether it's marketing, developing the app, whether it's analyzing the data or designing. We got some feedback from a recent assessment by Orca that our level of accessibility is good, but there was some room for improvement. So we're currently focused on making those improvements. We've got to a point now in the growth of our organization where we really recognize that if we really want to scale up our impact, both in terms of reaching greater numbers of young people who are at risk of experiencing complicated grief, and also of deepening the impact. So actually improving the core app so that it can really have a much greater therapeutic impact on the young people that we want to reach. To do that, we really need funding, which will just allow us to make significant improvements. So that's the main focus. And in terms of what and how we want to improve the actual app, we've developed this clinical framework, which is taking a young person on a journey from grief to compassion. And there's lots of sort of types of therapy these days that are focused on compassion, and there's lots and lots of evidence for compassion being a very great outcome, both for individual well-being and obviously for the world. And that's why we're particularly interested in it, because we believe that when a young person experiences a loss, it presents them with it's like an unanticipated rite of passage. So they are suddenly in this position. It's kind of like being a fork in the road, and there's two directions in which they can go. One direction is, sadly, what we see too often is where all the problems that are associated with grief occur. That's usually just because they don't have the right support, the support that they need. So there's an increased risk of self-harm, suicide, anxiety, depression, school exclusion and offending behavior for young people who experience grief. But the other path, which is the path that we increasingly want to guide the young people who access our service down, is where grief can actually help you to grow as a person. So particularly, it can open your heart and allow you to develop more compassion, both for yourself and for other people. So we have at the moment a small team of guides who are young people who have been through the game, and they reach a certain level, and then they get in touch with us and they say that they're interested in turning their grief into ways to help other young people who are experiencing something similar. So they do things like they might provide content that can be put into the game. They help in different areas of the organization. So we really want to extend that whole framework and that journey, guiding young people down that other path, which is where the grief, which is obviously a tragic situation and nobody would wish it on anyone, especially when you are a teenager, but it can actually lead them down to a path of greater personal growth.
So obviously, if we're listening to this conversation and we think we would love to find out a bit more about your work, where can we go?
Well, the best place would be our website, which is apartofme.app. And you can sign up to our newsletter if you're interested in staying in touch. We're also on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn. So you can find us on those platforms too. But all of those links would be on the website.
Louis, thank you so much for speaking about A Part of Me. I look forward to seeing how the app develops. But for now, I hope you have a lovely day, and I hope we'll have you on the Happy Hour again at some point in the future.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio. Ross Wilcock is a visually impaired accessibility consultant, poet, spoken word artist, and writer. He is also part of the LGBTQ community. Thanks so much for joining me on the Happy Hour, Ross.
No problem at all.
We often talk about acceptance surrounding vision impairment. What has acceptance been like for you in terms of your vision impairment and your sexuality? Has it been two separate journeys, or has it intertwined into one?
I think it's very much been two separate journeys. I think that I've had my visual impairment since birth, and so I was kind of brought up in that sort of world of being treated quite differently, even though I didn't find it different at all. I found it very normal. And as I got older, the friends I made also treated it very normally, and it was very normalised in my friends group. It was very much a more outside societal point of view that seen it as a different thing and made me feel like I was different. As for the sexuality aspect. I didn't come out till I was 22 years old, even though I had known for a while, and I think that's the case for most people, you know, I knew for a while that I was gay, but I had a lot going on with my health and just, you know, dealing with being at school. I went to school in the early 2000s. I finished high school in 2010. So to come out around about that time, unfortunately, and quite sad to say that, you know, it was still quite a difficult thing to do. So coming out at 22 felt like a much more sort of acceptable time, even though, you know, being gay and disabled was rather difficult in many ways to kind of, in many ways, tick two boxes, and, you know, in many ways add an extra layer of, you know, an acceptance for myself.
Do you think that coming out now is maybe different to when you were at school? Or do you think there's still a long way to go in terms of educating children, raising awareness and ticking both boxes, like you said?
I think coming out now, I would like to think, is a much more different thing, a different experience. But I do also think, and it's heartbreaking to say that, like, there's still a long way to go, because we don't see that representation in media as we should do. There are, you know, a lot of really incredible LGBT influences, like, you know, like singers, like we've got like Ben Platt, Troye Sivan, very open actors and actresses like, you know, Elliot Page, Kristen Stewart, are very open about sexuality. But I think that there's still a long way to go, and there's still a lot of prejudice in the world against sexuality. And so even though I do think in the immediate thing, I do think and hope that it's easier, but that's a very, you know, that's coming from someone who's been out of school for like over a decade. So I would like to think that it is easier, but I can't guarantee you that it is. But I do think that, and hope that it will get better as more representation is seen in media.
Do you feel accepted in both the vision impairment and the LGBTQ communities?
Acceptance is a very, it's a word that I am trying to find still in all honesty. I think that I have very much felt or starting to feel acceptance in myself, and I think that's the most important thing. And the more I tell my story through art, through poetry, through my writing, through my work, I think that I've got no other choice but to kind of, you know, see acceptance in the world and to allow, you know, others to have their opinion. And I think that that's what acceptance is all about, is, you know, is having acceptance yourself and surrounding yourself with people that are open-minded and are accepting, and those who don't accept you shouldn't be in your life and shouldn't be part of your own self-growth and your own self-acceptance.
You do a lot of work on disability representation within TV and film. Do you feel represented within these areas as someone who is part of both the vision impairment and the LGBTQ communities?
I think that for many people who have any kind of disability, whether it's, you know, hidden or, you know, like mine, which is a lot more visual, and, you know, I'm also coming from the point of view of someone who's mobility impaired as well. I think that I've found in media, based on chatting with other friends of mine who are disabled in the industry, it does feel like we do have to work that extra bit harder to be taken seriously. And we have to sort of, at least in my experience, I felt like I've had to build my own career in many ways, like in terms of finding ways to get myself in the door, or having to prove myself when I don't need to, when I shouldn't need to. And I think it is very hard to find mainstream representation of disability, because I've always found that if there is an LGBT character or a disabled character in film, 9 times out of 10, it's they're played by an able-bodied actor, and that's not a very fun experience when I know that I'm very capable of representing my own life and my own experiences. And no disrespect to any actor who ever portrayed an LGBT or disabled character. I'm sure that they had the best intentions. I do just think that there are many actors who are openly disabled or openly LGBT who could have taken on those roles and who should have taken on those roles. And I think that, you know, being someone who is still relatively new in the media industry, despite what I've done, I do think that I've still got a long way to go before my voice is heard on a mainstream level.
How does it make you feel knowing that you might be presented with more challenges and that in some ways you might have extra hurdles to cross?
In many ways, I think that having those extra hurdles and extra challenges kind of keeps me grounded and keeps me motivated in many ways. And that might be me being overly positive about the whole experience, but I think that, you know, doing that and kind of going from the ground up, it has really helped me see how the media world is built and how the media world is, you know, about business and about money, and but where there are genuinely true people who want to see other people's dreams come true and who want these voices to be heard. And I think that even though there's still a long way to go, I am seeing a lot of people wanting to hear voices such as my own in much smaller, more regional platforms, you know, like maybe Scotland-based rather than UK-based platform. And I think that's a very powerful thing, because it might be that my voice might only have a platform in Scotland, but I'm happy because that means that other visually impaired people, other LGBT people who are going through a similar experience as me, can hopefully know that they do have a chance and they do have a voice and that they can make a difference.
You're a really creative person. Is creativity something you use to let your feelings out in regards to your vision impairment and your sexuality?
Yes. Do you know, it's a very funny thing when it comes to creativity. I didn't find my creativity burst until like kind of early 20s. And I think that coming out really helped that. Not saying that coming out solved my life problems, if anything, it made things a little bit more difficult. But I think by finding that part of my identity, it did mean that I was more open to talking and telling my story. And I would never look back, and I would encourage anyone at any age, old or young, to start some form of creativity, whether it's art, whether it's writing, singing, performing. Finding a creative outlet has really benefited me in so many ways, like so many ways I can't even talk about. It's kept me sane in one of the most darkest times of my life and everyone's life, you know, with the recent year and a half. And I think that if it wasn't for the creative outlets that I had, I don't think I would be as you know, positive as I have been and as I am.
Does it help you to express yourself?
Yes, being creative really helps me to express myself. And even if, and I think that a lot of people think that by doing these creative things, you need to share it with the world. That's the beauty of creativity and writing, is that it's very much your own journey. And if you want to share it with the world, you can. Equally, you don't need to share it at all. And I think that's the beauty of it. And I think as long as you have a platform and a way to express yourself, you never need to share it with anyone. Equally, you can share it with everyone with the push of a button these days, which I think is a very beautiful thing, you know. And so, yeah, I do think that it's really helped me to express how I'm feeling and help to, you know, help get a lot of internal things out. And even, like I said, if no one else ever reads it, I know that it's out there somewhere in the universe.
It's been wonderful to chat to you, Ross. Thank you so much for joining us on the Happy Hour.
Thank you so much.
In silence, I was lying back gazing skyward when the moment got shattered. I remember what she said, and then she fled in the path of a lightning bolt.
Jake Bugg and his song Lightning Bolt. Now, you may remember visually impaired chef Kim J from previous episodes of The Happy Hour. Well, today she joins us to share a perfect recipe to keep us warm and cosy this autumn.
Hi, I'm Kim J and I'm a volunteer for RNIB and a visually impaired chef. You will find me on my Facebook page or web page or even on YouTube. Just Googling Kim J Cooks, that's Kim J-A-Y-E Cooks, and you'll find me. Now today I'm going to go through one of my favourite autumn recipes, and it's Caribbean paprika chicken. Now when you get to autumn, well, before COVID, we've all been on holidays, we're all thinking of the beaches, and I love going to the Caribbean. So when it comes to the autumn and sort of the holidays are behind me, I like sort of reminders of summer. And this is perfect, and it is a perfect comfort food. Now, what you're going to need, the ingredients are 2 chicken breasts, which have been skinned and filleted. Now, for those of you who are uncomfortable cooking with meat because you don't know whether or not the chicken is going to still remain raw, just cut the chicken pieces, the chicken breasts into cubes. Now, if you have a talking food thermometer, make sure that the center of the chicken is at 70 degrees and it will be fully cooked. Now, the other ingredients you're going to need are 2 cloves of garlic, finely chopped, 1 capsicum pepper, finely diced, 6 basil leaves, 1 teaspoon of mixed herbs, 1 large tin of chopped tomatoes, 8 millilitres of red wine. Now, if you don't drink alcohol, you can omit this, although it is really nice with the red wine. 1 large tub of double cream, or if you want to be healthy, a large tub of creme fraiche, 50 grams of butter, 3/4 teaspoon of salt, 1/2 teaspoon of black pepper, 1 1/4 teaspoon of smoked paprika, 1 tablespoon of vegetable oil, and 1 teaspoon or even 1/2 teaspoon, if you're not sort of don't like the heat, of chili powder. Now, the method, what you need is a large wok or a frying pan. Now, the first thing you're going to do is put the oil and 1/2 the butter into the frying pan, and wait till you can hear the butter sizzling. And as soon as you can hear the butter sizzling, add in the chicken. Now, what we want to do is seal the chicken. So cook it on either side for about 4 minutes each. Now, you can tell when the chicken is sealed because the flesh, which is normally sort of slimy and sort of wet, starts to almost crisp up and becomes firm on the outside. Now, as soon as that happens, take the chicken out and put it to one side. Now, in that same pan, add in the remaining butter. And what you need to do is add in the mixed herbs, the garlic, and the chopped peppers, and cook on a sort of medium heat for at least 5 minutes. Now, you'll start to smell the peppers and that lovely sweetness of the peppers coming through. Now, as soon as you can smell the peppers smell, and it is approximately 5 minutes, you then add in your tin of tomatoes, your salt, your black pepper, your paprika, your chili powder, and 1/2 of the basil leaves. Cook for a further 5 minutes. Now, for those of you who've got like a blitzer or a food processor, blitz that sauce down. Now, if you don't have one, don't worry. It still is perfect as it is, and it's And I always love the textures in this left alone. So after 5 minutes, you then add in the chicken, and you want to be cooking this chicken in this sauce for about 5 minutes. After 5 minutes, add in your red wine and cook for another further 10 minutes. Once sort of you've been simmering this chicken in this sauce for about 15 minutes, and you'll find that the sauce starts to reduce, at this stage, you add in the double cream. Pour in the double cream, reduce the heat to a simmer, because what you don't want to be doing is boiling the double cream. Just allow it to gently come up to heat. Once you can hear the bubbles popping in the pan and it's simmering away, let it simmer for 5 minutes. Add in the rest of the basil leaves. And that's it. And you serve it with rice or fresh potatoes and vegetables. And it is utterly delicious. And with this sauce, you can actually use it on beef as well if you want, on pasta. But it is perfect with chicken. And the smell is stunning. It's so provocative of the Caribbean, the smell of the paprika and the chilies. And it's well worth trying and a good autumn recipe.
Chef Kim J there with that amazing recipe. Now, if you'd like to keep up with all her recipes, the easiest way to do that is to follow Kim on Facebook at Kim J Cooks. Now, that's J with a J-A-Y-E. Now, are you much of a cook, Holly? Are you going to try Kim's recipe?
I feel like I should try because it sounds really nice, doesn't it?
Yeah, but you dodged the question. Are you much of a cook?
All right, let me get onto it. But to be completely honest, I actually am probably better at baking than cooking. I know it's not as healthy though. Do you have any recipes to share with me, Paulina?
I always go see if it's cold. I'm always going to go for a pasta recipe. So anything that has lots of garlic in it. And I do have a tip for you. If you want to make an amazing pasta, the thing to invest in is apparently truffle oil.
Oh, I've not heard of that before. Now, I do love a good pasta dish, so I may have to go out and purchase some and get back to you on that one.
So there we go. Next episode, it's going to be cooking with Holly.
Oh, no.
Now, we still have a few things coming up for you. We're going to hear some Human League now as we slowly come to the end of today's show. And the last track today will be introduced by Ross, who will share his music therapy moment with us.
And it's a good one. A small hint for you, if you're a Taylor Swift fan, then you'll love his choice. And that's us at the end of today's happy hour. It was lovely spending some time together, but unfortunately, Paulina and I have to run off.
So to take us into the news, Ross Wilcock returns to share his music therapy moment.
Now, remember, if you'd like to share a song that means a lot to you with us on the happy hour and get involved with this segment, then just get in touch. Paulina, what's those details?
Well, it's super easy to get in touch. The details are radio@rnib.org.uk for your email. You could also message us on Facebook, RNIB Connect Radio, or, you know, if it's easier, we're on Twitter @RNIB Radio.
Get in touch, and Paulina and I will see you on the next show.
Bye.
So the song that I'm choosing is the song August by Taylor Swift from her Grammy Award-winning album Folklore. This is a great, lovely track that has really helped recapture my creative mind going. Taylor Swift's always been a massive inspiration for me throughout my writing journey and my career. And during some of the darkest times in my life, her music's always gotten me through. So this is my song of choice. It's August by Taylor Swift.
Salt air and the rust on your door. I never needed anything.
Hey, you're listening to the Happy Hour podcast, a trimmed down version of our hour-long show. If you're enjoying the songs and would like to hear them in full, along with all the interviews, tips, and our chat, just catch the full show plus some extra tracks that you might have missed on RNIB Connect Radio. We're on every Monday at 1 p.m. with a repeat Thursday at 6 p.m. and Sunday at 10 a.m. And we have new episodes every other week. But for now, I hope you enjoyed the Happy Hour podcast and we'll see you on the next episode.
For more downloads like these, visit rnibconnectradio.org.uk/podcasts.